Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2013 second quarter financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Scott Wolny, Chief Executive Officer of Atlas. Thank you. Mr. Wolny, you may begin.
Thanks, Melissa, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. On this morning's call, I'll provide a brief update on our business and second quarter 2013 results. Paul will review our financials, and then I'll return with concluding remarks. As Melissa mentioned, we will then open it up for questions and answers. During this call, we'll make reference to a presentation which is available in the earnings release info section of the investor relations page of our website. Before I begin, I'll turn it over to Paul to read the safe harbor statement.
Thank you, Scott. This morning, Atlas issued its 2013 second quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. As Scott mentioned, we will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. We welcome each of you to review this presentation and follow along. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2012. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation material and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed in this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. In the second quarter, Atlas continued the momentum that we built in previous quarters, and we're pleased with the steady growth in our core lines. We reported strong underwriting improvement, including considerable increases in premiums written, net premiums earned, and net income. Our primary focus for the first half of the year was to continue to strengthen relationships with our core independent agents, integrate Gateway completely into Atlas's infrastructure, and continue to leverage the nationwide geographic platform we've established. Throughout all of this, we're vigilant with respect to pricing trends in our core taxi, limo, and paratransit lines, which to date have been steadily improving and remain favorable. Let me touch on some of our basic financial and operating results from the quarter, as summarized on slide four of our presentation. Gross written premium increased 79.2%, with 90.6% improvement in our core commercial auto lines. We improved our financial ratios across the board, resulting in year-over-year improvement in our combined ratio, which was 95% during the second quarter, driven primarily by a $1.7 million improvement in underwriting results. Our net income for the quarter was $1.7 million, or $0.16 per diluted common share, net of accounting treatment for preferred shares. Before I go into greater detail about Atlas's operations, let me address our recent announcement surrounding the redemption of outstanding preferred shares. The details of this transaction are found on slide five of our presentation. On August 1, 2013, Atlas entered into a definitive agreement to purchase for cancellation $18 million of outstanding preferred shares. The negotiated purchase price was $16.2 million, or a $1.8 million discount to liquidation value. In addition to providing 22 cents accretion to book value per common share as a direct result of the discount, this transaction also eliminates potential future dilution to common shares, as the preferred shares we redeemed could have converted to 2.286 million common shares in the future. This potential dilution was factored into our actual per-share income figures for the second quarter 2013, but will not be included in these calculations going forward. To help provide clarity as to what earnings would have been on a post-redemption basis, we've included pro forma figures in our earnings information for the quarter. For example, on a pro forma basis, factoring in the redemption of the preferred shares, as if this redemption had occurred in the second quarter, would have resulted in diluted earnings per ordinary share for the three-month period ended June 30, 2013, of 40 cents, of which 21 cents per share relates to accretion from the discounted purchase and 19 cents per share relates to net income available to common shareholders. On the same pro forma basis, book value per share would have been $6.29 as compared to the actual figure of $6.07. We are very pleased to complete this transaction, which will have an immediate positive impact on our income per common share and book value. We negotiated what we felt were favorable terms, purchasing the entirety of the preferred stock available for redemption at a meaningful discount to liquidation value. Now let me move on to a discussion of our core lines of business as summarized on slide 6 and what we're seeing in the market. We continued to see positive trends on our core lines of business, which consist of specialty insurance products for users of light commercial vehicles, specifically taxicab, limousine, and paratransit operators. Atlas's growth rate has been achieved through our strong independent agency network. These are focused agents with considerable experience selling our core products for one or more of our insurance subsidiaries. We do not distribute through wholesalers, managing general agents, or other intermediaries who are disconnected from the point of sale. This close contact with our agents and policyholders is critical to the effective underwriting, as well as understanding of exposures and loss reserving. Just a few years ago, our insurance subsidiaries wrote more than $100 million in those lines of business that today are considered core to Atlas, and the majority of this business was written in a relatively small number of states. Much of this business was transitioned away from our companies in 2009 and 2010 as a result of challenges which have successfully been addressed under Atlas's ownership during the past 2 years. We're now seeing a recommitment from existing agents and a strong demand from new agents in response to Atlas's value proposition, coupled with positive trends in the market. Having expanded into 40 states plus Washington, D.C., we expect not only to recapture the volume of business that was written historically, but to continue growing to a point where we have what we believe to be a proportionate market share of the proportionate share of the market. It's important to note that, as a rule, our agents didn't lose the relationships with their customers when the business was moved from our insurance subsidiaries pre-Atlas. They just placed that business elsewhere. As we've strengthened our value proposition over the past 2.5 years and reestablished credibility with agents and policyholders, much of our premium growth has been winning that business back. But it's a process. Through the first 6 months of 2013, we wrote $38.9 million in premium, and feel that there is considerable room to recapture incremental business through continued strengthening of our relationships with these agents and our policyholders. Atlas's independent agents know their customers, understand our value proposition, know how to sell it, and are as committed to our specialty niche as we are. The positive effect of progress in the area of business development can be seen in our increasing volume of opportunities to quote business and approximate 85% renewal retention ratio is graphed on slide 7, as well as our target level hit ratio and growing volume of applications from both new and existing agents is graphed on slide 8. Including the addition of Gateway, we greatly expanded our geographic footprint, illustrated on slide 9. As we enter into what increasingly appears to be an improving market environment, our focus is now to achieve proportionate market share in each of the states in which we write. The states shown in blue are those where we're actively distributing our core lines of business. When we established our expansion plan, we identified states in which we felt Atlas could generate between $1 and $5 million in premium in the first 12 to 24 months. All active states must be areas where our value proposition, which includes effective claims handling and specialized customer service, has comparative value relative to local competitors. Further, they must be markets that we deem favorable in terms of achieving underwriting profitability. That is, we need to be able to properly gauge and value potential loss costs and achieve target hit ratios at adequate price levels. We also actively avoid states where there's a high propensity for fraud and, with inactive states, take relative exposures from territory to territory into consideration. We review each state in which we're writing business regularly to evaluate rate sufficiency and to validate that our assumptions are holding up. On slide 10, you'll see that geographically, we continue to diversify our book of business. As we mentioned last call, while these percentages can vary from quarter to quarter, the general trend is that we're becoming far more diversified than in previous years. Illustrating this fact, only 46.7% of our gross written premium in the second quarter of this year came from the five states currently producing the most premium volume, as compared to 63.8% in the same quarter last year. Compared to the three-month period ended June 30, 2012, we experienced growth in gross written premium in 33 states in the three-month period ended June 30, 2013. We experienced more than 100% quarter-over-quarter growth in 24 of those 33 states. This includes the impact from the Gateway acquisition as well as organic expansion. Regarding Gateway, we're continuing operations in St. Louis and have successfully integrated reporting structure and workflows into the Atlas platform. We've been pleased with this progress in a relatively short period of time. Policy retention is on target, which we believe is a testament to the experienced and dedicated professionals working for our organization and the relationships that Gateway has with its agents. Let me take a moment to address what we're seeing in the market in terms of rate. We've been quite open that our attention in 2011 and 2012 was focused on expanding geographically in preparation for a hardening insurance market. We recognize that commercial auto in general is a competitive sector and are laser focused on achieving incremental underwriting profit throughout our book with a focus on small to mid-sized customers in our niche markets. In determining opportunities for incremental rate, we analyze risk and loss cost trends, have regular discussions with agents, evaluate retention rates, and listen to our customers. Rates have been going up at increasing marginal levels for the past 2 years. Over the past quarter, we continue to see room for increased rates in our specialty commercial auto sectors. We currently anticipate ongoing moderate pricing activity for the balance of the year, continuing the trends seen on slide 11 of the deck. It's important to recognize that rate increases are now compounding, as we saw increases in each quarter of 2012 as well. In the past 12 months, a number of lower-priced competitors, primarily those who are distributing products through managing general agents, have exited. This should have a positive impact both on pricing as well as our growth rate. With that, I'll turn the call over to Paul for a review of our financial results.
Thanks, Scott. I'll briefly go through the quarterly highlights. We'll welcome each of you to review our press release and filings should you have any further questions. As shown on slide 13 of the presentation, Atlas's gross premium written increased 79.2% to $16.6 million in the second quarter of 2013, a 90.6% increase from our core commercial auto lines. Please note that approximately $1 million of surety business is included in this figure and is 100% reinsured as it continues to transition off our books. Our net premium written of $15 million consists entirely of commercial auto writing. For a bit more color, of the $7.2 million improvement in total net premiums written, $2.6 million was due to Gateway writings in Q2 of 2013, while the remainder was largely due to geographic expansion and the recapture of business that Scott noted earlier. Net premium earned was $17 million in the three-month period ended June 30, 2013. A 124.7% increase compared to $7.6 million from Q2 of 2012. Net premium earned related to core commercial lines increased 171% in the three-month period ended June 30, 2013, relative to Q2 of 2012. As we wound down our personal lines business at the end of 2011, virtually 100% of all premium earned in 2013 and going forward will relate to our core commercial lines. Let me take a moment now to summarize our operating ratios for the quarter. For the second quarter 2013, Atlas's loss ratio was 64.6%, compared to 71.6% in the prior year period. This reduction is almost entirely due to the shift in business to higher retention, better underwritten core line, auto lines. It's important to note that the acquisition of Gateway has not had any material impact on the loss ratio during the quarter. As we have discussed in previous calls, our business focus is not on what is largely considered a high severity sector of commercial auto. However, our insureds can crash a lot, and our ability to handle this higher frequency of claims is one of the primary drivers of our value proposition. We believe that our extensive experience and expertise specific to underwriting and claims management in our commercial lines will allow continued loss ratio improvement during the remainder of 2013. Acquisition costs were $2.2 million in the second quarter 2013, or 13.1% of net premium earned, as compared to 18.5% in the prior year period. This reduction is attributable to the reduction of the non-core personal lines business that had carried higher commission rates and ceding commissions on the discontinued 100% reinsured Gateway Work Comp program that has an offsetting impact to other underwriting expenses that I will explain in a moment. The ratio for other underwriting expenses, or OUE, was 17.3% in the three-month period ended June 30, 2013, compared to 21.4% in the three-month period ended June 30, 2012. Approximately 1% of our OUE ratio in the quarter was offset by ceding commission related to the discontinued workers' compensation program at Gateway. Backing this out, along with backing out other integration and short-term costs related to Gateway, our normalized OUE ratio would have been 15.5% for the second quarter of 2013. As previously communicated, we anticipate the OUE ratio to continue trending towards our target of 10 to 12% of net premium earned. We continue to see progress being made each quarter as we are beginning to reach our minimum efficient scale of an annualized $50 to $60 million in net premium earned. As a result of improvements across each line of our financials, and including additional integration and short-term costs associated with the acquisition of Gateway, the company's combined ratio for the second quarter 2013 was 95%, compared to 111.5% in the prior year quarter and 98.1% for the first quarter of 2013. In slide 14, we display a historic view of our combined ratio, which provides perspective on the progress we've made in the past 2 years. Net income for the quarter ended June 30, 2013 was $1.7 million, compared to net income of $130,000 in the prior year period. This equated to 16 cents of earnings per diluted common share, net of the accounting treatment for the company's preferred shares. Now let me move to the balance sheet and investments. On slide 15 of our presentation, Atlas's cash and invested assets at June 30, 2013 were $145 million as compared to $120.8 million at December 31, 2012. Investment income in the quarter was $942,000, which represents an annualized yield of 2.6%. The duration of our investment portfolio matches the expected liquidity requirements for our claim payment needs. Our current duration is 3.8 years, and fixed maturities represent over 99% of our investment holdings. Based on Atlas's invested assets at June 30, 2013, a 1% increase or decrease in interest rates would result in approximately $104,000 of increase or decrease, respectively, to investment income. At the quarter ended June 30, 2013, Atlas had $3.9 million of unrealized losses as a result of the impact of rising interest rates on the market value of the securities we own. As I mentioned, the duration of our portfolio is well matched to our liquidity needs, and we expect to hold our investment securities until maturity. Therefore, we do not expect to realize this near-term change in market value of these securities. Our view is very simple. As an investor, you're evaluating our company on our ability to achieve underwriting success. Our investment philosophy is centered around preserving statutory capital to support our continued above-average growth rate. As illustrated on slide 16, our portfolio has an average S&P rating of AA and is predominantly comprised of corporate and government bonds. Book value per common share at June 30, 2013 was $6.07, compared to $6.20 at March 31, 2013 and $6.55 at December 31, 2012. Through the first 6 months of 2013, book value has changed relative to December 31, 2012 as follows. A reduction of 37 cents related to the dilution from our U.S. IPO. A reduction of 4 cents from legal and professional fees related to our acquisition of Gateway. An increase of 27 cents from net income attributable to common shareholders. And a decrease of 34 cents related to the change in unrealized gains and losses. Before I turn the presentation back over to Scott, let me explain the triggering event under 382 that was originally announced via press release on July 22, 2013. As a result of shareholder activity, there was an ownership change for tax purposes, which is basically defined as a cumulative ownership change of more than 50% during any three-year period of the company's shareholders. Let me quantify this and explain its impact on the company. As of June 30, 2013, Atlas had 8,166,891 common shares outstanding and had a total tax-affected federal net operating loss carryforward of approximately $16.1 million, or $1.97 per common share. Also, at June 30, 2013, the company had an overall valuation allowance against these tax assets of $1.47 per common share. Following this triggering event, the company estimates that at June 30, 2013, it would have retained total tax-affected federal net operating loss carryforwards of approximately $14.6 million, or $1.79 per common share based on the outstanding shares at June 30, 2013. Book value per common share is expected to be unaffected by this event, as the amount of lost tax assets are anticipated to be well within the valuation allowance, which is already held against the majority of these assets. In basic terms, approximately the first $2.4 million in net income for the next 18 years will be tax-free, effectively lowering our tax rate for the foreseeable future. The adjustments associated with this triggering event will be recorded in Q3 2013 financial statements, since the triggering event occurred after the financial statement date of June 30th. With that, let me turn the call back over to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks again, Paul. We continue to see favorable trends in our target niche markets within the commercial auto sector. Atlas is continuing to win back business from existing agents and build new relationships as our taxi, limo, and paratransit customers are increasingly recognizing the attractiveness of a focused carrier with a product offering solely dedicated to their business. We believe the niche market in which we operate is approximately $1.5 billion of premium, and we feel Atlas is well positioned to achieve our goal of proportionate market share of approximately 20% of this specialty segment over time. We also intend to continue pursuing strategic M&A on an opportunistic basis, both to accelerate our growth in key areas within our current niche markets and to potentially expand our focus into other specialty commercial auto markets at appropriate times in the future. Everyone at Atlas remains focused on driving growth through diligent and effective underwriting, disciplined claim handling, and highly specialized customer service. While our growth rate has been and is expected to continue to be above average for some time, underwriting profit is our paramount objective. We believe that as a specialty provider, the structure Atlas has in place can deliver better than industry bottom line results in both hard and soft markets. Both employee and agent performance are based on ROE. We think this approach is critical to maintaining a culture that emphasizes the importance of underwriting profit. Last but not least, I want to thank our extraordinary employees, agents, and customers for an excellent quarter. While we expect to continue to build on the success seen in the second quarter, it's important to acknowledge the meaningful progress delivered to date. With that, let's open it up for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our first question comes from the line of John Barnidge with Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, guys. Your expense ratio has come down in recent quarters, and you mentioned an OUE target of 10 to 12%. What do you consider your target acquisition cost ratio?
That should remain in the range of 14 to 16% with an average around 15%. We pay our front commission of about 10 to 12% to retail agents. Premium tax can range anywhere from less than 1% to upwards of 2%. And some of our larger agents also have profit sharing, which could result in another 2 to 2.5%. So those are the components. The key from quarter to quarter really is the business mix. So depending on the states in which we write, the variations in state premium tax can cause that 14 to 16% range. But for the purpose of modeling, I'd suggest using a 15 or 16% number, and it won't really change with scale.
All right. On the OUE target, I mean, you've mentioned like $50 million total premiums to get there. How soon do you think you can get that 10 to 12% target?
We expect to be there by the end of the year on a quarterly basis. You know, and as you've seen every quarter, we've incrementally moved towards that. First quarter of this year, there were some non-recurring integration costs related to Gateway that caused the percentage to be a little bit higher than it would have otherwise been. And, you know, as you see from our written premium, we're already writing premium at a level that would reach that scale. It's a matter of time as those premiums earn in over the 12-month policy periods.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Adam Patinkin with David Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning, Adam.
Good morning, Adam.
Hey, well, first off, congrats on a pretty strong set of results, both the headline numbers and the underlying peripherals. And as I kind of look at the figures, one thing I noticed was that the company earned 13 cents in Q1, but then the consensus analyst estimate for this quarter was only 11 cents versus like the 16 cents that you came in at. And I think that one of the reason why folks might have had earnings lower in Q2 rather than Q1, I think a big factor of that is that historically there's been some seasonality in the business. Can you speak to whether there will continue to be large seasonality going forward, or do you think that because the company is kind of more geographically diversified than it's been in the past, maybe not as reliant on places like New York and Chicago, will there be less seasonality or maybe no seasonality relative to the past?
Sure, that's a great question. We do expect some amount of seasonality, but it won't be as significant as it has been in the past. You know, as I mentioned on the call, the percentage of business coming from our largest states is decreasing. At this point, it's almost half the concentration that it was even a year ago. And so as we continue to diversify geographically, that seasonality will become less of a factor. However, there will be some common taxi renewal dates in January for Chicago, for example, some March common effective dates in New York, which are two of the biggest markets in the country, will always have some impact. One thing I could refer you to is slide 7 of the deck that accompanied this call. In the upper left, there's a graph that shows new business submissions, actual and last year. That'll give you the dotted line for last year will give you some idea of how the seasonality impacted new business applications. And when looking at that, I think it's safe to assume that the applications come in approximately 60 days before we typically write the business. And so that will give you some idea of what the trends have been. You know, again, you sort of see a lift in the first quarter in terms of what's actually happened this year. And then, you know, we also anticipate a lift coming towards the end of the year, which is really the business that's coming in for the January 1st renewal period.
Got it. Great. And then as I kind of look at the company going forward and assuming, you know, maybe a little less seasonality than in the past, not none, but a little bit less than in the past, and I'm not looking for specifics, but just kind of directionally, assuming that Atlas is able to continue penetrating its markets and gaining scale to leverage its cost base in these kind of steadily hardening markets, do you think it's fair to say that there will continue to be sequential profit growth going forward quarter over quarter?
Yes, and particularly as we reach the minimum efficient scale in terms of earned premium, which we're really, you know, approaching that tipping point, as I mentioned when I responded to John's question. We expect that our expenses in terms of dollars will grow at a marginally slower rate than the growth in earned premium. Mm-hmm. And so we should see expanding margins as we go forward, all else being equal. We also believe that the current pricing we're putting in the market should result in improving loss and LAE ratios as well, and that could further accelerate the growth in income.
Got it. And then you've spoken publicly in the past about being in this kind of high growth phase for the company on both the top and the bottom line. And as we kind of try to gauge how much white space there is in front of you, do you think that you're kind of in the eighth inning of the growth phase where maybe it lasts another quarter or so before leveling off to a more steady growth pace, or maybe the fifth inning where you've got a few quarters to go, or do you think it's maybe more like the second inning where you've got a year and a half or a couple years of kind of this high growth and margin expansion before you kind of hit that kind of steady state long-term growth levels for the business?
Sure. I would say the first thing I guess I'd refer you two is, again, on slide 7 in the upper right, we've got the slope showing the new cars essentially reflected on the applications we're receiving. And you can see that there's been a pretty straight line in terms of slope. So at this point, you know, we aren't seeing the opportunities to write business slowing in a material way. You know, you do see some seasonality coming in, you know, where it can flatten a little bit and then accelerate again. And what's really behind that is a couple of things. You know, a big part of the growth that we've seen in the last year and the growth we expect in the next year is recapture business. And so while we are now seeing a significant amount of business coming back to us from agents that had been agents of one or more of our subsidiaries for a number of years, it really wasn't until early 2012 that we asked them to begin rolling books of business. You know, essentially we felt that 2011 was a period where we earned the right to ask for that business back. We also saw the market beginning to harden in 2012, some competitors exiting, and so, you know, we think it's the combination of our earning the business back coupled with the fact that there were fewer options in the market, which makes it easier for agents to encourage policyholders to move business back to us, particularly when our pricing may be higher. And so in terms of that recapture business, I would say we're probably halfway through. And we expect that recaptured business to continue coming back to us in a significant way for the rest of this year and through 2014. We also then expect to continue to see above average growth coming from the organic growth in states that we hadn't been writing in the past, and I'd expect that above average growth to continue through 2015. So if you thought about it as a curve, sort of as opposed to innings or as a way to think about it that way, I would say that we are probably about halfway through the curve and where the curve will continue out through the end of 2015 before we get to a close to proportionate share, which is when I'd expect our growth rate to slow to a more typical level, would be sort of after we get through 2015. So hopefully that helps to give you the context you're looking for.
Got it. So like a very strong growth through 2014 or kind of consistently strong and then, you know, above average strong in 2015 and then kind of consistent growth after that.
Right.
Something in that ballpark.
Correct. And that assumes that the market continues to be sort of moderately firm the way that it is now. If we saw a dramatic change where the market began to really harden in earnest, that could accelerate. And if it began to soften, then obviously it could moderate.
Got it. And then I just have two quick questions on the balance sheet and on the share count figure. So on the balance sheet, you know, the company kind of has this hidden asset on the balance sheet, which is this valuation allowance against net operating loss carryforwards. And if I look at the valuation allowance against, you know, 9.4 million shares, you know, fully diluted once you get rid of the prefs and the warrants are all exercised, you know, that's something, and, you know, including the modest write-down of it from exercising 382. So that adds another like dollar of extra book value to the kind of headline book value. So now that you've strung together a few quarters of profitability with a reasonable expectation for continued profit growth, if you will, can you speak to whether you may reassess whether this allowance is still merited and maybe a timeline for that, when that might be reviewed?
Yes, certainly we reassess our tax assets on a quarterly basis. We evaluate our profitability not only from the current quarter but from prior quarters. So considering we're, you know, maybe four quarters into a profitability state, we've made the determination at Q2 2013 that it may be too early to actually begin to look to reducing those valuation allowances at this point. However, as we continue the growth that we have that Scott noted and continued profitability trends that we believe will occur in the Q3 and Q4, we may end up going to take another look at those valuation allowances and make a determination whether or not we can reverse some of those during 2013.
Yeah, and that's an issue, too, where we see guidance from our outside tax advisors and also our auditors. So I think it's premature to be able to predict when we might reduce those allowances, but it is something that, as Paul mentioned, we look at each quarter. And do want to be fairly conservative in terms of, you know, when we make the decision about actually writing those up. Obviously, the real value are the economics behind them. You know, we will actually have, you know, the $2.4 million of tax-free income each year for, you know, the next 20 years.
And keep in mind, too, that we've taken the position to offset our tax expense on the current quarter basis with a comparable reduction of that valuation allowance. So we are eating into that valuation allowance on a quarterly basis, you know, and we are aware that it's still out there and we need to, you know, continue to reevaluate that as we move forward.
Got it. That makes sense. And then kind of a final question. So as I'm sitting here this morning, I've noticed that several sell-side shops have come out with, you know, you guys, I guess, they've been using a 12 cents earnings per share number for you guys this quarter. And I think the way that they're getting there is that they've been including the pref in the share count and then backing in the warrants as well, whereas I'm kind of using a 9.4 million share count fully diluted, just, you know, all the shares plus all the warrants being exercised by year end, which I assume will happen. Maybe can you, and so using my numbers, I guess I get to 16 cents rather than to 12 cents. So I'm wondering, maybe can you comment on how you would look at the share count and what you expect to happen with those preferred shares that are in there right now and whether those might go away over time?
Yes. So, you know, as we discussed during our presentation, we did redeem 18 million of the preferred shares from our prior owner, which equated to about $2.3 million of shares had they been converted. So those shares will not enter into our dilution calculations on a go-forward basis. However, they did enter into our dilution calculations during Q3.
Got it. So you expect those to be removed on a go-forward basis?
Correct.
Okay. Right. So the appropriate share count then to use on a fully diluted basis, assuming all the warrants are exercised and all the options are exercised, is something in the ballpark of 9.4 million. Is that about right?
Correct.
It's also worth noting that in Q1 of this year and for every prior quarter, the potential impact of the preferred shares were not considered in the net income calculation because of the way GAAP wants you or requires you to treat those. So because our basic earnings per share on a quarterly basis were less than the preferred dividend, those amounts actually were not factored in. And so if you want to look at an apples-to-apples comparison to see where Q2 income was, for example, relative to Q1, you know, you could basically use that $9.4 million in both instances, and that would give you a better view as to what the growth in net income actually has been. So I think that's an important note, since that's a sort of unique situation that we've just transitioned through.
Got it. So I think then, just as I'm looking at this quarter, then I'm kind of using 16 cents, you know, not pro forma, and then pro forma adding back the benefits of not having to pay the dividends and the prefs, you know, it adds another 2 or 3 cents to that, to 18 or 19 cents. And then, you know, kind of looking forward then, it's all about the base business and how it grows.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Matthew Berry with Lane 5 Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Matthew.
Okay, so I don't want to harp on this too much, but I just want to go back and look at the size of some of the opportunities that you're seeing again. We spoke that going through the end of 2014, you're about halfway through winning back the prior share with your existing agents, and that you expect that to continue through 2014. So if I understand correctly, when you have completed that, that would get you back to the sort of $90 to $100 million of premium that you had before. Is that correct?
Related to the recapture of the business.
Yeah.
So we don't expect to get all of it back, but we do expect to get, call it 80% back. So that would be approximately $80 to $85 million, possibly a little bit more.
Okay.
And that's in about a dozen states, which is where American Country and American Service were very active in the past. But then add to that the incremental business that we'll be getting in the additional states that get us to the total 40-plus DC that we're writing in now. You know, keeping in mind that one of the three components we looked at when we expanded into those states was the expectation that we'd write between $1 and $5 million in every state in which we're active. And so all in, what we expect to be moving towards is that 20% proportional market share of the $1.5 billion total space, which should get us into a total premium range of about $200 to $300 million.
That's based on the existing network of agents that you had already, so just working through your existing agent relationships?
It's the combination of both. So if you look at the deck on slide 8, the bottom chart actually shows the volume of business we're getting from existing agents, and those were essentially agents of American Country and American Service prior to Atlas's acquisition of the company. And then the green line shows activity that's incremental from new agents. Those are essentially agents that have been signed up subsequent to our acquisition of the companies. And then we are now adding to that the 60 or so agents that we were able to add having acquired Gateway earlier this year. So right now, about 70% of our applications are coming from existing agents, and 30% are coming from new agents. But what we're beginning to see is a marginally higher amount of additional applications beginning to come from new agents as those agents are becoming more and more comfortable selling our product, and as those agents who in the past were working with competitors of ours in some cases are finding that those competitors, whether they were generalists or companies working through managing general agents, are now exiting. So what we're seeing is incremental volume from the existing agents. That's the business we expect to grow to that $80 to $85 million portion, and then an increasing volume of new applications coming from new agents as well.
Okay. So you've managed to answer all my subsequent questions in that description. One of the other things I wanted to ask about was that with Gateway, you brought in some trucking premium. Is that right?
They had a trucking program that in 2011 generated about $10 million in premium. Gateway, prior to selling to us, had put that program into runoff in April or May of 2012. And so when we acquired the company on January 1st of 2013, there was still some unearned truck premium, about $1 million worth, but the program was in runoff. We're continuing to run that off. And so you'll see some truck premium showing up through the end of this year, but after this year, the earned premium from that program should be fully run off the books, and then we'll continue to handle the claims, obviously, until you know they're fully adjudicated.
And just so you know, Matthew, we only had $44,000 worth of truck premium, net earned premium in the quarter.
It's
very insignificant.
Okay. And then I just wanted to actually, you know, I have some other questions, so I'll take those offline after I've gone through the queue. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brian Hollenden with Sidoti. Please proceed with your question.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Brian.
Hi. I think a lot of my questions were answered also, but I just wanted to ask, are you still writing to a a sub 60% loss ratio now, and what, you know, and what would that number be? Could it be 55%?
So our profit target in our underwriting models right now is 60% for loss in LAE. There are certain areas where, as a result of more limited competition, we are able to price to a slightly higher target, 57.5% approximately. And so, you know, that's the pricing that we're putting into the market today. As the proportionate amount of earned premium on our books relates to business written at those target levels, you would expect to see the loss and LAE ratio that we're actually booking trending towards that target. But we're also taking a perspective that we want to see how losses actually develop before we fully give ourselves credit for the pricing that we're putting into the market. In other words, if we're pricing to a 60, we aren't immediately going to book to a 60 with the idea that we want to make sure that the actual claims activity reinforces what we expect based on the pricing targets we have in place. And, you know, we're seeing that at those pricing targets, those profitability targets, our hit ratios are holding up. If we begin to see the hit ratios going up higher as a result of either the limited or more limited competition I mentioned or just general market hardening, we will obviously revisit those, you know, opportunistically and look for areas where there may be a ability to price, you know, to a slightly higher target or slightly more profitable target.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for the question, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Fang Li with Baleen Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, Scott, Paul. How are you guys?
Good, Fang. How are you?
Excellent, Fang.
I'm great. Awesome, awesome job. I had a question actually on a very, very small follow-up to Adam's point about kind of what the recurring earning power of the business is as of Q2. Paul, you mentioned that your other underwriting expense had some one-time items in it, so being some one-time gateway integration costs and the workers' comp surety, I guess, or the stuff that gets reinsured away.
Right.
So I'm just doing math. That's kind of, is that like kind of like $300,000, give or take, $300 and change?
I'm sorry?
Just the dollar amount of that kind of one-time adjustment, isn't the math right? That's kind of like $300,000?
Correct.
And so that's a one-time kind of cost that won't occur in Q3 or going forward.
Well, there's a portion of it. So there's two elements of that differential. One is the integration costs and the kind of the short-term costs for the gateway transaction. So, for example, we've integrated all the accounting services here in our corporate office in Elk Grove, and there's no longer any accounting staff at the Gateway facility in St. Louis. So those costs go away in terms of salaries and benefits and those other sorts of costs associated with employees. And then there's some other smaller integration costs that actually do go away starting in Q3. So that's one portion of it. It's like half of it. The other half relates to the discontinued work comp program. And we're going to continue to see some a little bit higher OUE expenses, but they are going to be offset with the ceding commission that we're receiving on that work comp business. So we'll see, you know, into Q3 and into Q4, we'll see lower acquisition costs, but a bit higher OUE. But when you look at it on a combination basis of total underwriting expenses, they should flatten out. There's an offset going on acquisition costs and OUE.
Gotcha. So really the one-time stuff is kind of half of the $300,000, which is like $150,000,
right?
Which comes out to 2 cents a share. So, like on a run rate basis, if you know, if you're at 16 cents before adding back preferred dividends, say 18 and 19 after adding back preferred dividends, if you then add back the one-time expenses, it'll be like kind of 20 to 21 cents per share that you're on a run rate basis we should expect as the base for this quarter.
Correct.
Awesome. That's thanks for the clarification.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, it is star one to ask a question at this time. We'll pause here for a moment to allow for any other questions to come in. Mr. Wolny, there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the floor back over to you for closing comments.
Great. Thanks, Melissa. And thank you to everyone for joining us. We're available to answer any additional questions you might have and look forward to speaking with you again during Atlas's third quarter financial results conference call.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines and have a wonderful day.